Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish. Publicize your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, Entrepreneurship and Leadership Channel listeners on the New Books Network. I've got tonight today a very interesting guest, Michael Dembinski, who has sent me a very elegant, concise bio. I think I first met him 25, possibly 30 years ago in Poland, and he's had contact with many entrepreneurs over the course of his career. But Michael, rather than read your bio out, why don't you introduce yourself the way you like to introduce yourself if you meet someone, broadly speaking, businessy, who's never heard of you and doesn't know anything about you?
Well, first of all, I'd like to say that I suffer from imposter syndrome. So my, a bit surprised and very flattered to be invited onto your show as someone who doesn't have an ounce of entrepreneurship about them. Although, as you say, I do work with entrepreneurs and in the business community, I have done ever since I started working. So I was born in London. Both of my parents were Polish emigres who ended up in the UK after the end of the Second World War, couldn't go back home. I studied at Warwick University and then City University London, where I did a postgrad in journalism, and that got me straight in to the Confederation of British Industry, where I worked for 16 years, 9 years as the editor of CBI News, monthly news magazine that reached some 22,000 board level readers. That gave me a good flavour for being at the interface between government and business, business environment, regulatory affairs, the law as it applied to businesses, whether it's taxation, labour law, or innovation, trade, lots of different areas. In 1997, I moved to Poland with my, as then, young family. And after about 5 years working on various publishing projects, I got involved in the British Polish Chamber of Commerce, and I've been there since 2002. So it'll be 22 years this September that I'll have been working with the BPCC. Very much a network of networks, very much an organisation which has, I would say, two key goals. The first is business development, which is really more for the SMEs. It's about quality event design, bringing together people in mixers, various formats of networking events. And then for the corporate members, it's really about business environment. It's about, should we say, lobbying. It's about representation. It's about fighting for a level playing field in Poland, whereby foreign capital is treated equally to domestic capital. So obviously, last 8 years here in Poland was very much an uphill struggle, but now we see the situation being much better, a more transparent government. What we want from it really is more predictability when it comes to legislation, so that our members can know, for example, how to plan their taxes, how to plan their employment for the years ahead, and not just going from one poorly designed piece of legislation staggering to the other one as we've had over the last 8 years.
Okay. Well, I think, you know, for our listeners who are used to having entrepreneurs and leaders, I think what we're going to try and unpick is the insights you've had into entrepreneurship, dealing with the people you deal with. And given you, obviously, both Kimon and I are foreigners who became Polish citizens and did a lot of business in Poland and around the world. And I think that quite a few of our interested listeners will be interested in the sort of compare and contrast of differences between Polish entrepreneurs and British entrepreneurs, because there are some differences and it's worth elaborating them. I think also at a higher level, in sort of very telegraphic form, it would be good to highlight what's the point of a Chamber of Commerce, that some people think that you can get on perfectly well without a Chamber of Commerce. Other people, you know, are involved some of the time, but not all of the time. So also a little bit about who the Chamber of Commerce is for. But if I could draw out, like, let's leave the corporate people off your, or out of this discussion. So sort of an export manager working for a medium-sized British company probably isn't the woman or lady we want to talk about, but someone who's founded their own business, either in the UK or Poland, like, what would be the things that they can get out of being a member of a Chamber of Commerce, be it the BPCC or another good one, that otherwise would either be hard to obtain or maybe more expensive to obtain elsewhere?
I think it's being part of a network. That a network obviously is equivalent to the square of the number of its members. So the more members you have, the more effective that network is. It's also about plugging into other networks. So the British Polish Chamber of Commerce is one of 17 international chambers of commerce present in Poland. We get together to fight the good fight on behalf of foreign investors. But at the same time, it's also a very useful networking organization. So we hold events around Poland. It's not just Warsaw. I was in Łódź last month, where we had 10 international chambers of commerce getting together in Łódź in the offices of mBank. 200 guests there from chambers of commerce from India, Canada, Ukraine, Switzerland, United States, Germany. Really brilliant event. We do these events also in Warsaw, in Kraków, in Wrocław, in Poznań. So from that point of view of networking, it's important. But the other thing, and we stress this all the time, I hate over promising and under delivering. So when someone contacts us and said, well, we're thinking about joining your chamber, I always use that John F. Kennedy quote about what you can do for the network rather than what the network can do for you. Because we see many, many times that, especially the small businesses, they come, they join us for a year, they don't really get involved because there are other things going on in that owner-manager's space. And after a year, they resign. Well, fair enough. But the ones that stick with us for year after year are the ones that get involved. Their faces become known. You can count on them to be at a given mixer. They become part of the establishment, as it were, and it's a lot easier for other members to recommend it, because it's very much a recommendation game. It's that thing about know, like, trust. So the more you see people, the more you get a chance to.
Okay, I'm going to jump in and say, in terms of the networking, would that be mainly business development, like finding clients, or would there be other things that? Because that's what I think the first thing people imagine, but then you might think, well, if there's a British businessman in Poland, they might be wanting to sell to Polish people rather than sell to other British people. So what would be the, you know, like, say, one might be business development, but what would be the other sort of, just like a main two or three benefits that someone might get you know, obviously they can be contributing, being part of the network, getting to know people face to face, on which trust is based, which leads on to business. But what might they get? Would they find customers or have other benefits, do you think?
It depends whether you're B2B or B2C, or indeed if you're B2G, business to government. But if you're B2B, for example, if you represent a law firm, a consultancy, a translation company, a headhunter, then it's worth being in that room. If you're selling a product to consumers, for example, a member that's resigned recently, tea company, probably not the way in to gain new consumers. But certainly in the B2B space, given that the structure of our chamber, very much like other chambers, is there is a central core. In our case, it's those FTSE 100 investors who are present in Poland. So we've got big names, large UK corporates. And around those, we have a continual dance of the consultants, the advisors, the accountants, the lawyers. And most of them will find their clients within that group. But as
so if Cadbury's or JCB have a big operation in Poland and they're a member of the chamber, then professional service providers might get an opportunity to sell to them in Poland through meeting them at the chamber or something like that. Is that what you're saying?
Cadbury's used to be a chamber member until they got bought out by Mondelez.
Yeah, I was quoting them as being a formerly British brand people might have heard of.
So the big UK brands that we have would be GlaxoSmithKline, AstraZeneca in pharma. We'd have HSBC. We have Provident, Prudential in finance. In manufacturing, GKN, Driveline. We have smaller companies in the aerospace sector, BP and Shell, lot of shared services. So it's not just front office. It's not, for example, we have Standard Chartered Bank. They do zero business in Poland, but they have a large and growing IT hub here in Poland, as do Hargreaves Lansdown, UK's number one online financial supermarket, do no business in Poland, whatever, but they have their IT development here in Warsaw.
Yes, so for listeners, that's actually something that not everyone might be aware of, that the within the European time zone, Poland, not only Poland, but especially Poland, has taken on the role that sometimes Pune in India has taken on, of being a sort of back outsourcing business, global business services, and whether that's accounting or human resources or customer service. It's, and those aren't just British companies, there are companies from all over the world doing that, and that's a major trend. But you mentioned several times the interests of foreign businesses in Poland, but when we were chatting a few weeks ago, you also were mentioning Polish entrepreneurs and what you were doing for them. So could you also just talk to that a little bit, that why would a Polish entrepreneur be involved in the chamber, and what sort of services would they get from, or what would be in it for them? Let's put it like that.
Well, we are currently, and this is something like post-Brexit, post-pandemic, formulating a new strategy, which is to ride this new, propagate it, a new wave of Polish entrepreneurs who are looking at investing in the UK. We've seen this after 2004. There was a large wave of Polish entrepreneurs who set up businesses in the UK. By 2013, Polish-born entrepreneurs were the sixth largest group of foreign-born entrepreneurs who'd set up businesses in the UK within the space of 9 years. It got into the top six. But we worked very closely. We worked together helping set up an organisation called PB Link in the UK, run by a guy called Bartek Kowalczyk. They've been very successful in creating a network of Polish entrepreneurs, and also helping those Polish entrepreneurs to network out into the UK entrepreneur community. So they do a lot of networking events. They actually do courses to help Poles network. And I think this is an interesting point, which I'd like to talk about, the differences between networking, how it's perceived by Britons and how it's perceived by Poles. And how the Polish approach to networking really does need to be guided in the right way. And this is something that Bartek is doing together with colleagues from the UK to open up the Polish entrepreneur community so that it doesn't become ghettoized. So over the years, Bartek has done mixers with other communities, UK communities of entrepreneurs, be it they're from India or Nigeria or anywhere else that you have large numbers of entrepreneurs in the UK from, so that the Poles there in the UK can also mix with business owners from other countries. But a new trend that we've observed in the last maybe 5-10 years is Polish companies going to the UK to buy a UK business. And that now is becoming very interesting. We've seen some high profile cases, the highest profile case being Telefonica Cable from Kraków buying JDR cables in the UK, complete with two factories. They're now building a third factory that's going to be manufacturing electric cables that take power that's generated on offshore wind turbines and bring it onto dry land. And with export books all over North America and the Middle East, JDR cables now belongs to Telefonica Cable, TF Cable. So
sounds like quite a large transaction. Can you put a number? Do you know the details? How many hundred was some that hundreds of
Yes, it's hundreds of millions of euro that transaction was worth.
Yes. And you talked about the character of or you alluded to the different way that Polish business people perceive or practice networking compared to British. Could you and by all means talk in stereotypes, because everyone listening will know that to every generalization like this, not everyone fits. But if you could stereotype the Polish way and the British way, what would be the stereotype of one and the other approach to networking? Well,
if we go back to communist times, I think it's very important for the non-Polish audience to remember that if you went back to 1985, you'd have very, very, very few entrepreneurs who are legally doing business in Poland. By 1995, it was literally hundreds of thousands. It was a bang. It was like a, you know, big bang, year zero situation from the point of view of entrepreneurship. So still lots of baggage from communist days. And one of the main ones really revolves around trust, about who you can trust. And if they're immediate family, then yeah, you can trust them. But if you're just standing in a room with a glass of wine and someone comes up to you, you know, in the old days, that would be a signal that it's probably someone from the security services wanting to tap you for some information that you may have about some opposition politician or something. So trust is something that has to be built up from a lower level when in Poland. But there's also the perception that, oh, someone's coming up to me, so therefore they must want something from me. And the expectation that, you know, you swap business cards and that you're going to be pestered with either spam email or unsolicited phone calls trying to sell you something. The British way is a lot more relaxed and laid back. And I think we talked about the work of Geerte Hofstede and the six dimensions of cultural difference. But that's something that where Poles and Brits, whether it's one of the big ones is power distance, about how Poles are a lot more deferential and a steeper hierarchy, whereas Brits are more informal and relaxed and first name terms straight away, whereas in Poland it's per pan, per pani, bit of a barrier when it comes to networking. So one of the things that Bartek is doing in the UK for Polish entrepreneurs is actual courses in, you know, how to move from small talk to business conversation in very practical steps.
Okay, so there's the trust and the sort of the way of doing it, and that seems to me, I mean, I'd say that networking skills, or, you know, how to behave at a business reception, these are not skills which all Brits are equipped with, in my observation. And also, some Poles are very, very, very good at it, and it's partly about focusing just on the human connection first. And like, once you've got a human connection and you actually have a feeling for the other person, then maybe you can move on to business. But if someone's got the wrong mindset, that comes across as very creepy, because you go up to a stranger and say, tell me about your hobbies and children, and it just doesn't work unless you unless you know how to do it.
I think part of where we are in the big picture is a greater understanding of neurological disorders, behavioral disorders, psychiatry. In the old days, someone would be said, oh, he's an introvert, or he's paranoid, or, you know, you attach various labels from pop psychology, which aren't really all that apt. But there is certainly the case that if you are somewhere along that autism spectrum disorder, you will behave differently in a networking environment than if you've got ADHD and your eyes are constantly looking over the shoulder of the person that you're talking to, looking for the next person that you can move to, rather than just you know, being stuck with one person, or not even stuck, but just enjoying a conversation with one person that's going deeper and deeper and deeper into some arcane topic that is of mutual interest to you. And I do have this, and might be a little bit controversial, but I think that Poles as a whole might be a little bit more, Polish men maybe, might be a little bit more along that autism spectrum than British men, who might be a little bit more on the attention deficit spectrum. These are just pure conjectures at the moment, but I think that there might be something to that stereotype.
Yeah, so I mean, we have the MBN's a fairly academic institution, so you've qualified that this is speculation rather than decades of research. But I want to talk a little bit about entrepreneurship, also gender differences. Those are interesting. That I first came to Poland in 1989, but first moved into, was traveling in communist Europe, as it then was, in, I think, 1984. And I remember back then being very struck by how strong the entrepreneurial spirit was. And when communism ended, there were wave after wave of Western, British, European, West European American politicians and civil servants and consultants coming east, supposedly to teach entrepreneurship. And I remember thinking that many Poles I knew were more entrepreneurial than their British equivalents. Now, I don't know whether you agree with me or not, but could you talk about your, do you think that Poland was an entrepreneurial society, is an entrepreneurial society, and will be, just from, like, say, up to the end of communism, in the sort of post-communist period till now, and looking into the future? What's your feeling about the entrepreneurial spirit of Poland over those three time periods?
Yeah, I mean, let's go back to the mid-80s. The economy was in decline there. It would be going downhill right the way down to the end of communism, and it really was dire. You'd go around in the late 80s and the shops would be absolutely empty. So if you were to survive, you would have to have that entrepreneurial streak. Certainly lots of Poles travelled within the communist bloc, but they would buy whatever they could buy here in Poland, take it to, say, Bulgaria, sell it, buy something else in Bulgaria, pop across the border into Turkey, buy something there and bring it all the way back to Poland, sell that at a profit. I remember my cousin in Wrocław, her husband once bought five lawnmowers, and they lived on the sixth floor of a block of flats. No lawn. So why do you buy six lawnmowers? Well, I exchange them for things like tights or the band that goes around the engine of a Fiat 126.
A drive belt. So basically, what you're saying is that the difficulty of the communist environment was an environment in which people had to be entrepreneurial to survive. And many years ago, we had Simon Szupik, who was the CEO of Silver, a successful Bluetooth, a very high tech company. But he was reflecting of his early days in business in the 1980s in Poland, and he just said that when he hears young people complaining about the tough business environment, they have absolutely no idea. And one of the characteristics of an entrepreneur is resilience everywhere, not just in Poland but across the world. And if communism, to survive under the communist system, you needed to be resilient. So in a way, there was that sort of Darwinistic preparation, and just this creating a nation of traders. But if you're comparing it to, let's say, the British environment, because to some extent, Britain's had an uninterrupted market economy for centuries. There hasn't, so yeah. It's more normal. At the same time, perhaps, would you agree that, like for like, many educated Brits had better opportunities not in business than their Polish equivalents? So to some extent, Polish entrepreneurship attracted a caliber of person who might not have bothered going into business in the UK because they could have a good job as an administrator or a civil servant or a teacher or just doing something else.
I think so. I think there was a short window where entrepreneurship was seen as the way forward, that early 90s, you were getting Western corporations moving into Poland. And many of those took a decision straight away that they weren't going to employ people who'd had any kind of experience working in a communist state enterprise. They'd just got the wrong mindset. So they just recruited young people. They still had a layer of expats on top as managers. But in those early days, in the 10 years after transformation, it really was a I know so many entrepreneurs who'd made their first money by just doing things like driving down to Vienna and coming back with a van full of aquarium food, or buying whole containers of tinned fish from Thailand. There were unlimited opportunities, little regulation at the time, because it was felt by Leszek Balcerowicz, the finance minister, that this whole thing needs to just get jump started and not have bureaucrats interfering. And that really was a great time. But again, coming back to contrast with the UK, I think one of the things that has been deadening the UK's entrepreneurial spirit, I must say, who am I to talk with, as I said, zero entrepreneurial spirit. But in the UK, when my parents' friends have died, they generally leave them a house worth £1 million. Whereas my Polish friends, when their parents die, they leave them enough money for a new laptop. And that difference in inherited wealth is a huge motivator for people who've grown up without access to the material bounties that you had in Western civilization prior to 1990. So I think it's different for today's generation of Polish youth. I think they're particularly spoilt in demographics being one key reason that there's half as many young people entering the labour market today as there was 20 years ago, as the number of births in Poland halved over a period of 20 years. Sorry, it's 10 years in China. It's even worse in China. But young people today, they have a job market that's welcoming them with open arms. Our members, employers in the corporates, for them, the biggest problem is recruitment and retention. So if you can get a fairly cushy job and start off straight away on 7,000-8,000 zloty a month, going through all the hardships of setting up in business with no one in particular to mentor you is quite tough. I think one interesting element is succession. It's the owner managers who set up businesses in the 1990s who are now coming up to retirement age. They want to take it easy. Very small number, according to Deloitte, is something like 4 or 5%, passing that business on to their children. Many cases, children not interested. They've emigrated. They're wanting to be surgeons or politicians or something else rather than getting their hands involved in running a business.
Interesting. So yes, I mean, certainly it seems that the children growing up in Poland now are growing up in a very, very different environment to the one their parents and grandparents, and you indicated inherited wealth as a potential demotivator. Although I want to ask you about gender differences and entrepreneurship of a Polish woman and Polish men in a moment, but just to follow that line of reasoning, I was going to come to it later in the impact of Brexit and the reasons that Polish companies are investing in the UK, that despite the negative impact on growth, the UK is still a big wealthy market due to centuries of capital accumulation. And I wonder whether, do you think that's a problem in Poland? There isn't enough capital accumulated from previous generations to fund the investment needs of the economy. That do you think there's enough capital around in Poland now?
Probably not yet. I think this is one reason why successive governments have not imposed any inheritance taxes. That you know, you can inherit everything from your parents and not pay a zloty, as long as it's directly in the family. And I think that there is an understanding that if Polish entrepreneurs are to compete on a level playing field with larger international investors who've come into Poland, that they do need to have easier access to capital. And from that point of view, London is very much seen as a honeypot by Polish entrepreneurs, in particular tech entrepreneurs, who see that whole ecosystem there of business angels, venture capital, private equity, business mentors as well, mentorship. There are so many mentors in the UK, people who've had successful careers, a very comfortable quality of life. They've retired or been retired. They have time on their hands. They have money on their hands. And the idea of them helping an entrepreneur through the pains of startup and scale up is a form of giving back. Poland doesn't yet have that. I think it probably will in about a generation's time, but not quite there. The other advantage, why the UK rather than say Germany or France, why London, is those, as you mentioned, centuries of well-worn trade routes around the world outside of Europe. So sure, if you want to sell to Europe, you're okay doing that from Poland. There's no real need to move your business, although I do talk to entrepreneurs who move businesses to Czechia or Estonia simply because it's easier to do business there, easier to, you know, talk to the tax authorities, etc., easier to do stuff online. But the real reason that Polish entrepreneurs look at London is with an eye to global growth. So if you're a tech entrepreneur and you've got a solution or, you know, nice, neat piece of software that has literally global applications, then the UK is probably a better place because you could set up a limited liability company there, a lot of support from the Department of International Trade, and off you go, selling to North America, Middle East, Far East. Easier than you would be if you were trying to do that out of Warsaw.
Interesting. And just before we move, maybe we'll move on to the gender issue. That in terms of, would you, if you think of the, you know, sometimes in some ways Poland is accurately perceived as quite a conservative society. In some ways, on the other hand, the number of women in senior positions is quite high in Poland compared to many European countries, contrary to the stereotype. Would you say that's true in business too? Do you come across a lot of successful Polish female entrepreneurs in your line of work?
Well, funnily enough, we'll be doing on the 6th of March, the second edition of Women's Entrepreneurship Forum, except this year we're having to relabel it simply because there are just not enough lady entrepreneurs. That it's going to be about female leadership rather than entrepreneurship. So there'll be women in senior positions in business and in diplomacy and government, talking about the challenges that they face breaking through the glass ceiling and the gender discrimination. But in terms of women who have started up and run their own businesses, it is quite few, I must say, compared to the men who do it. And as you know, it might be tradition, family, that kind of thing. That and also what I've seen is that that there are certain, shall we say, areas where, you know, like obviously health and beauty or public relations, where, you know, communication is important. That's where female entrepreneurs can be seen in greater amounts.
Yes, I mean, my observation is that the sort of barriers that women face in Poland are quite often similar to those in the UK in terms of, you know, expectations of multiple roles and maybe not having, you know, just old-fashioned prejudice, which isn't always elaborated, but sadly sits there in the background. Well, I'm just thinking about things that we haven't covered. If you're trying to, well, Rafał Stichin, who was on the podcast many years ago before we were on the MBN, who's one of the early shareholders in Comarc, founder shareholders in Comarc, one of Poland's largest yes. IT companies, and yeah. was a student of Janusz Filipiak's, said that, and he's got a slightly hard to pronounce company called something like Aerilion listed on the Warsaw Stock Exchange now, which exports software. And he said that he thought Polish entrepreneurs were hungrier and more aggressive than their Western, not necessarily British, but West European equivalents, that they'd simply try harder because Poles knew the value, like, you know, 100 million euros is more attractive to a Pole than it is to a Dutchman because it buys more in Poland. And he was slightly joking, but do you think that it's true that Polish entrepreneurs are sort of still hungrier for success than their British equivalents, like for like? Is that a fair characterization?
I think so. I think that level of determination is crucial. And looking at the trade flows between the UK and Poland and the UK and the EU, post-Brexit, you can see that Poland is one of those countries where the value of its exports of goods, services, wow, but that's a different story. That's to do with the shared services centres as well. But just looking at goods, there have been a lot of companies from Western Europe who've just pulled out of the UK altogether. So there's a number of brands that British consumers have been used to since the start of the since Britain joined the EEC in the 1970s, and those brands have disappeared, or else they're a lot more expensive, and Polish entrepreneurs can see that those gaps. They can see that there are opportunities there. That means filling in a lot of forms, but then many of them have been used to filling in forms. If you were doing business before 2004, doing business with the UK is just the same as it used to be before 2004. It's just that now the UK is out of the EU, Poland is in. But the Polish saying that if you close the door in my face, I will come in through the window is very true when it comes to certainly the UK market. And I think that level of determination, you can see it. You can see it when you're talking to Polish entrepreneurs. When you know you probe them sort of fourth, fifth level of questioning, and they're still, you know, fighting back, then yeah, I would agree that that determination really is a critical factor when it comes to the entrepreneurial health of a nation. But the next question is, how long is that going to last for? I think Japan is a very interesting case study. country that in 1945 was, you know, burnt out, radioactive wasteland. Within 15, 20 years, it had become one of the largest economies in the world, overtaking many of the countries that had defeated it in 1945. But by 1990, something stopped. Early 90s, growth fell back to zero and has stayed pretty flat ever since then. And it's as if that whole generation that was picking itself back up off the ground, building new companies, new factories, exporting around the world, building up new wealth, that there's a generational change, and that new generation didn't want to work 12-hour days, 6 days a week. They wanted to read their manga comics and dress up in furry suits and live at home with mum and dad. And if you take that sort of sudden decline in a nation's determination, that's what might happen to Poland too.
That's a rather pessimistic note on which to end. My background before I went into business was economics, and I remember a lecture from my days at Cambridge University where Professor Matthews, who is an eminent British economist, said that, you know, over the last 180 years, the British economy had grown between 1.3 and 2.5% a year in 95% of all the years. And whether or not you could explain it, you needed to accept it. And he was talking about the long-term growth rate. And Poland's had quite a high, relatively high growth rate for the last 30 years. And it's a very interesting question. Will that maintain? I rather think it will, because it's becoming over time easier. You know, whether the infrastructure is getting better, the trains are getting better, the phone lines are getting better, the way that even things like the way the post office works, still quite clunky, but better than it was, or there are workarounds. And you know, if you know, there's a reason why countries like Norway and Switzerland can function despite their very high costs, because it's very easy to get things done there. And I just hope that in terms of the future of the Polish economy, which is interesting to us, but I hope to some of our listeners, I just hope that the growth rate can continue and the level of motivation continues. So just as we wrap up, I know we talked about Brexit independently of this podcast, but do you foresee do you foresee a long-term negative impact on the British economy that Poland can somehow, not necessarily take advantage of, but can Poland catch up with and at some stage leapfrog the UK, would you say, in our lifetime? I'm 57. You're about my age. You're 67 years old.
I'm 66. When I was 50, our CEO at the time asked me when I intended to retire, and I told him that it'd be in the year when Poland overtakes the UK in terms of GDP per capita on a purchasing parity level, obviously. But so that's likely to be 2030. And in 2030, according to a couple of forecasts I've read, Poland is likely to overtake on that measure both the UK and France in 1 year. So the dynamism certainly is looking at economic forecasts for the foreseeable future, at least. And, you know, 4%, 3.5%, that's doable. But the real question is demographic. Last year, Poland produced 290,000 children compared to 700,000 in 1982. Mm. So this is obviously going to ricochet off the labor market. The question is whether, for example, artificial intelligence can automate away a lot of jobs that used to be done by, you know, Panik Sięgowa, who is, you know, in a tizzy because, like, the figures are out by a grosh or something. As you talked about the post office, a lot of bureaucracy, a lot of completely wasted effort, that lovely Japanese word, muda, any activity which does not add value. There's so much of that still in the Polish state sector, in larger corporates, in agriculture, that still needs to be worked through. But artificial intelligence, I see as a hope. I think another one really is immigration, and this is something that Poland needs to get used to, and we're already seeing far more foreign nationals working, in particular around the shared services centres in Poland's big cities already. You can see a lot of young men from India who are probably doing IT studies at Polish universities and filling in by delivering for Uber Eats or whatever. In my village where I live, Hinów, in apple growing district, for the last few years we've been seeing women from Nepal coming to pick apples during the apple harvest season. Polish agriculture is missing a million people already. So I think that a wise and carefully managed migration policy from the government is also absolutely needed, as well as more enlightened employment policies.
Yes, I was going to mention immigration, that Poland, according to an excellent website I'll put a link to called Notes from Poland, which provides quite neutral information about what's going on in Poland in English, has listed that for the last 6 or 7 years, Poland's given more working visas than any other country in Europe. And so Poland has been importing labour, and Polish cities are getting levels of ethnic diversity in line with some other European countries now, which is, I think, actually potentially going to be very positive for Polish entrepreneurship as a whole, because people coming in with different, with the ambition to work and make money can be very positive for an economy. And there's a sense of symmetry that so many Poles, particularly older Poles, remember going abroad to make some money when they were young, that they're quite empathetic to the idea of someone coming from a poorer country to Poland and doing the same thing. And I had a spectacularly impressive is the right word, the story. I met a young Bangladeshi student, 21 or 22 years old, who had managed to establish 3 kebab outlets, was making good 10, 15,000 euros a month profit, and was managing it while being a student. And, if that's possible, and possibly for people listening around the world, I think if you're looking for a way to get into Europe, what quite often happens is people think, so I'll get a place at a Polish university, I'll come to Poland, study in Poland, learn Polish, get a Polish passport, and then move on. And when that takes 5 years, by which time they're so embedded in Polish society, they decide to stay rather than leave. And that may make Poland a more diverse country as well.
Which I think is all for the good, but it's also a question of managing it so that you don't get situation like the banlieue around Paris, ghettoisation and marginalisation of ethnic communities, that if they are properly integrated into mainstream Polish society, then that's all for the good. But that does require learning a very difficult Slavic language.
Yes, but I think just to wrap up, is there anything important we haven't discussed about Polish or British entrepreneurship that from your perspective that should be said?
One thing I'd like to come back to, because I think this is going to be very important going forward, is the thing about psychology, about what it is that drives people. What makes them tick as entrepreneurs. And, there's on the one hand, there's the positive aspects of entrepreneurship, the genuine wealth creation. People who are creating new value, new quality for society. They're generating wealth that can be taxed. Taxes, if wisely spent by governments, then that's all for the good. You mentioned Switzerland and Norway, very good examples, Denmark. But there's also the negative aspects, that the so-called dark triad of narcissism, psychopathy and Machiavellianism. Which you see writ large in politicians, in CEOs of many corporates. They're people who have just been driven by the way that their mind is, their brain is made up, to push themselves inexorably to the top of that social hierarchy, the status hierarchy, and they're never satisfied. So, you know, having a comfortable life is not enough. They want to project their ego with a bigger, flashier car, an island, a helicopter, all of those trappings of success. That slightly worries me, that aspect. A very good American sociologist, Brian Klass, Klaas, talking about the dark triad and how that, you know, drives the wrong people into the wrong kind of jobs. But looking specifically at the entrepreneur and the entrepreneurial route, it is that question of what makes people tick, what makes people say, well, I'm going to start up my own business rather than simply having a cushy job in a administrative post in government or in a corporation. That really intrigues me, and I think there's going to be a lot more work done at universities about motivation, psychiatry, behavior and behavioral disorders.
Yes, well, and that's a wide topic we won't cover in this podcast. But from my perspective, one thing I think is very noticeable is how widespread a genuine patriotism is in Poland, and whether people are on the left or the right or agnostic or Catholic, when Polish kids go to school, they swear an oath to be good Poles and to build a better Poland. And somehow I think the history of struggle and oppression has created a kind of a social value about making the country a better place, which transcends politics. And I think that's not only about entrepreneurs, but I think there's a sense of national pride, which is actually may underpin wider motivation, not just business motivation, but amongst other things, business motivation, that people at some subconscious level want to be proud of what they're doing and make things better in a way that I think quite a lot of countries have rather lost, because patriotism has been bound up with nationalism and nasty things. Whereas in Poland, you know, the nationalists are there, and they're not always a very nice bunch. But the majority of people who, thank goodness, have voted against the hard nationalist government in the recent elections are still patriotic and still want to build a better Poland, and that feeds into the entrepreneurship as well.
Well, two things. Firstly, there's a joke going around in 1990 about how Poland's economy is going to get fixed. The answer is that there were two ways in which the Polish economy is going to get fixed. In one, the Blessed Virgin Mary descends from heaven, lifts up her arms, and the economy is fixed. And in the other version, the miraculous version, the Poles do it for themselves.
Well,
it seems that the Poles, that miracle did happen, and Poles did do it for themselves. The second point is asking Poles about what kind of Poland would you like to live in? What kind of country? The answer that always gets me as the best one is, I want to live in a normal country, not a country that's been distorted by centuries of invasions, of uprisings, of partitions, but a country as normal as a Norway or a New Zealand that can just quietly get on with its destiny.
Yeah, luckily I think Poles have a very, very idealistic vision of normal, which means people are aiming for a very good normal. Anyway, on that rather positive note, I'd just like to say thank you very much on behalf of the listeners, and we'll have your contact details and how to get in touch with the Chamber written up in the show notes. So if anyone wants to reach out to Michael, he's a very knowledgeable and engaging person. Thank you very much indeed for your time.
Thank you very much for having me on your show.